Hi there, my name is Phil Parr, and welcome to a special edition of our little show called Blind Like Me. I never can keep up. Don Shaw always keeps up with what number the show we're doing, how many of them we've done, and all. He's sort of our statistician, but I never can. This is 30-something. I want to say 33, but that could or could not be correct. Anyway, the date we're doing this on is the 29th of March of 2004. I do know that. I was sharp enough to figure that out before we came in here. 29th of March, 2004, and we have kind of a special little program. We, most of you know, went on a little cruise here not long ago with some other folks who listened to The Handyman Show and who listened to Blind Like Me. There were altogether 16 blind people on the cruise. We met some after we got there, and we took 12 with us, including, of course, Don Patterson and his wife, the warden, Emily, was with us. Sean in Houston didn't get to go, but maybe next time they will. But anyway, these are just some things we recorded on the cruise, and we thought you might enjoy them, and we thought they'd make up a good little show for blind like me.
I never can remember. The name of the ship is the Conquest. And the conquest does not mean, however, that you as a person may make a personal conquest. It's just the name of the ship, and nothing good may happen to you. We ended up with 12 people, six couples, to begin our little adventure with, and we met two others. We met two people, Bob and Roxy, with Seeing Eye Dogs, and we met Donna and Rick. It's hard to talk. Donna and Rick, who were just married, what is their situation? I can't remember. No one else does.
They were just Donna and Rick.
They were just Donna and Rick.
They own a bar.
That's right. They own a karaoke bar in someplace.
California.
California? I thought it was St. Louis.
You thought it was where?
I might be the other couple that was from St. Louis. I can't remember.
I think theirs was St. Louis. I think you're right. And they were here, and both of them sang karaoke quite well. And so we visited with them. So that made 16 blind people, which I realize, for the amount of passengers, is a little over the quota. But we've survived and had a good time. This is our final day. This is Saturday the 6th of what? March? The 6th of March.
It may be noted for the record, we have not yet seen one blind crew member. Just for the record, for you people who are... There are no blind crew members.
We haven't been served by any blind waiters or anything like that.
On the bridge,
as far as we know.
But they, as far as we know, no one's fallen over anything. Mark has shown us some new blind tricks that we're going to use a little later on. But anyway, we have kind of gathered around our little group, and we're going to say hi to Carol. How are you?
I'm fine.
And you are from where?
Tucson, Arizona.
Tucson, Arizona. And that would make Mark is also from Tucson,
That's
right?
Yeah, we live in the same town.
You live in the same town. Well, that's good.
Good idea since we're married.
It is. And what, Carol, what is your occupation?
I work at a community college in their disabled student resources.
So you...
Foundations for students.
You basically do, you assist blind people with their technology, and if they have any problems, you can braille things for them, or what?
All disabilities, whether they need a readers or... Or braille, or note takers in the classroom, anything like that.
But are we talking just blind people or other disabled?
All disabilities.
All disabilities.
Tell them what a few of those disabilities are.
They could have a learning disability. They could be deaf. They could have Asperger's syndrome. Just anything.
and you assist them. So that's kind of basically, I think Don did kind of that same job at Angelina College, and now our own beloved Don Shaw has that job, right?
Yes, that's correct. Not quite as involved as Carol's.
And this is a, so I guess this would be, is this a year-round job, or you'd have 2 months in the summer off? Or what?
2 months in the summer off, and it involves some counseling, academic advising, but the main portion of it is getting accommodations for folks.
Mark McCracken, what do you do for a living, sir?
I manage a group of mainframe computer programmers. We work for a computer services corporation, and we provide services to a manufacturing company in Tucson.
And that manufacturing company is in the town where you live?
There's a branch of it there, yes.
And you, how did you train for that job?
In 1979, I went to the Center for Independent Living in Berkeley and took their computer training class there. In 1980, I went to work as a computer programmer and been in the field ever since.
I wasn't aware in 1980, did we have speech-enabled computers, speech-enabled?
When I went to computer school, all I had was an Opticon. And my first year working as a professional programmer, all I had was Opticon. And I used to, you know, read the computer screen with that and read core dumps.
It would take a...
I don't know how I did it.
It would take a long... Yeah, I don't know how you did it either. It would take a long time to read the computer screen with an Opticon. We've come a long way since then.
Speech was a great leap forward.
It was, I think, for all of us. So you folks live in Tucson, and you both have dogs, don't you?
Yes, we both have guide dogs. We have three large dogs in the house.
Good heavens. But you elected not to bring those on the cruise. Was there a reason for that, or what?
Oh, people at work, they're all sighted. And they, you know, of course, get used to my dog and love him because he's the only dog there. They say, oh, you're taking the dog on the cruise? And I say, no, I'm not sure the boat has a poop deck. But I understand that it does.
It does.
But we find that a dog takes a lot of care on a ship, and it's easier to travel without the dog.
Easier to travel without the dog. And Carol agreed with you.
Well, and Mark's dog is older. He's over 11. He's 11 and a half. Mm-hmm. He didn't like change very much.
Sounds like me.
Carol's right. He would be a nervous wreck here.
He likes
his routine.
Tell us this little story about the other day when you had some folks visiting at your home. tell us that little story.
We came home from the Christmas Eve service at church with a couple of friends, and we just invited them in for a minute to give them a little present. And we all stood around and talked for about 10 minutes, and then we walked them to the door as they left. And as soon as the door slammed, my dog ran over and jumped up on the couch. Then he looked over and saw that we were still home. And our sighted daughter said he got the most puzzled look on his face and said, what are you doing here?
Because this dog thought everyone had left. Everyone was gone. It was hard to get on the couch, right?
Right.
We talked to this guy in Cleveland, Ohio, that said he was walking through a restaurant and his dog snatched a steak off a lady's plate. And come to find out, the mother had been feeding the dog, secretly sneaking the dog's steak bones. So the dog thought it was all right. All right, let's see. What else can I
do? Jason and Sue.
Do Jason and Sue? All right, we'll say hi to Jason and Sue. Where are you?
Right here.
Jason?
Hello,
sir.
All righty.
Where are you folks from?
West Virginia.
West Virginia. And Sue, you're also from West Virginia?
I was actually raised in Maryland, but yes, I'm living in West Virginia.
So Maryland and West Virginia are very close together.
Yeah, we're right on the border.
Now, you people are not married.
No.
Not yet.
But you have plans, or you...
Yeah, we're engaged to get married on May 22nd.
That's good. May 22nd. So if you can just keep her happy, it'll make 27 years.
Well, he paid for the cruise, so.
He paid for the cruise?
Yeah.
What a guy. We probably could find other people to marry him if you don't want to. I forgot to mention, Carol and Mark, you both totals.
Yes,
you're both totally blind.
Yeah.
And you, both of you, lost your eyesight in later life.
I had low vision up until I was about 30 and then lost the rest of it. And
I lost my vision when I was 26, so I'm 26 years sighted, 26 years blind.
We have debated endlessly on blind like me if it's better to start out that way, or, and I still don't have an answer, but it doesn't make any difference. What is your, you see perfectly, or you got?
Yeah, it's almost perfect, about 20, 30, 20, 40.
That's certainly a lot better than the rest of us.
Yeah.
But you drive the car.
Yes.
You have a car and you drive a car.
Yes.
And, so you've been his sighted guide all through the
yes.
Through the group. And Jason, you're total?
Yeah, almost total. I got a little bit of light perception.
Just a little. You can tell when you walk in a room, you can tell if the light's on.
Sometimes.
Okay. Where do you folks work?
Blind Industries.
Blind Industries. Now, what do they do?
They're a sewing factory that produces military physical fitness jackets.
We're also doing some for the Air Force and the Military Academy.
And both of you work there?
Yes.
Well, you can see. How does that work?
Well, they have sighted, and
there's a ratio, three blind people to every one sighted people that they have to.
Three blind people to every one sighted person, and you were the one sighted person that walked in the door when they hired three blind people, right?
Well, if they had that ratio was working on this boat, we'd be in trouble. Three blind guys and one sighted guy on the bridge. Can't you see that?
Yeah. One sighted guy on the bridge. The captain's blind, and they had a little problem. You're what?
They had to change and start a new company in order to continue employing the sighted people because they didn't have enough blind people.
They say we're going to lose that government contract.
Or they had to lay some off.
There are some operations on the jacket that require sight.
That you just cannot do it.
Because there can be dangerous. But then he does three or four jobs. He sews and works several different machines, and then I have several different jobs I do too.
And is this constant employment? Or they work you when they have a contract, or they?
Well, they have a continuous contract since I think since 2000.
Really. So this is a full-time job for you, and it's in Maryland.
Yes.
Yeah. And you all are in Virginia.
West Virginia.
West Virginia. I'd consider moving to Maryland.
We're going to.
Well, we're only about, we're only 45 minutes away. From the job.
Because he gets tired of showing his sale and sign card going across the border from West Virginia. To Maryland, right.
All right. Who are we? John and Pam. Who's John Connolly? He's right here. John Guy. John.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm pretty good.
How's it been?
It's been all right.
How much money you lost?
$100-something.
$100-something. Boy, it's painful. That is painful. And you're all familiar with John Connolly. He comes to Blind Weekend. He's been on these little shows before. And by the way, we're recording on John's
Plex Talk.
Very expensive. Plex Talk.
Plex Talk 101, I think it is.
Plex Talk 101. Assuming that, I guess there'll be a 102 someday, which will have more features.
Or it'll be discontinued.
He'll be stuck with a
pink elephant.
And then, of course, they won't service it after 2 years.
It'll be like our Sears drills. Yeah, clicking the batteries.
Yeah, Pat and I went and bought this very expensive Sears drill. It's $150. Yeah. And 2 years later, they quit making them, and you can't buy the batteries, and so we're just stuck with these.
And Sears says no apologies to us.
Hi, Pam.
Hi.
How are you?
Fine.
How much money have you lost?
Oh, I think I'm about broke even.
That's what I say.
Yeah.
That's what they all say. That's what they all say, Pam.
I think I lost maybe $20 last night.
Pam, of course, is John's wife. You all know that. I guess you wouldn't know that, would you? And, Pam, how did you like swimming with the stingrays?
I found it very interesting. I enjoyed it myself.
Would you do it again?
Yeah, definitely. Yes, I would.
Who are we missing?
You haven't talked to the warden yet.
We have not talked to Emily. Where is she?
She's right here.
I don't see her. Emily?
She's right here.
Oh, you're sitting right by Don?
Yes.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have talked at great length at different times. Don Patterson, who obviously is with us, has referred to his wife as...
It's sweet Miss Emily.
he refers to her on the show as the warden. In other words, it's like we were going to do this, but the warden said we couldn't, or the warden gave me permission to do this. He's always talking about the warden. And this, ladies and gentlemen, we have a round of applause for the warden.
Hi.
Welcome. Patterson, could you say a few words to our...
Well, they never... Listen, audience, they never let me come during the taping of the show. They're afraid I'd take it over. So here I am and glad to be on it, finally.
I think our fears are well founded.
No.
We've all met you. And you wouldn't.
Ask her what...
At least you wouldn't, may not take it over, but you'd tell us how to do it.
Right. That's exactly right.
You wouldn't want to do it yourself. You just want to be able to tell us.
I want to... Exactly.
And of course, yeah. My wife is not here. She would also fulfill the same role, I would think.
Now, Emily, what do you do for a living?
What I do for a living? I teach a preschool program for children with disabilities, but for 20 years, I was a teacher of the visually impaired and orientation and mobility instructor.
And you've been involved with blind people for a number of years.
A number of years, yes.
She cares to really.
Well, so finally, you thought, well, they're not so bad. I think we'll just marry.
Exactly. That's the way it was. He was the first one that came along. And so it was great, yeah.
National Marry a Blind Guy Day.
Yeah. So it's great. Yeah.
Well, that's good. And you still, this is your final year. You're about to retire from.
3 months. 3 months, and then I'm hanging it up. I'm so excited. Yes, cutting the days.
But you at this point in time, help disadvantaged or disabled children right now.
Right. That's what I'm doing right now. So, and
talk about our dog.
And we talk about what?
Talk about what?
Oh, he wants to talk about our dogs.
Dog.
Okay. Well,
your dog?
Here's Don has spent a fortune on this cruise for us, and all he talks about is how much he misses our dogs.
And Don hates dogs.
And he hates dogs. So, what does that tell you?
I don't know if he hates you.
He might. I don't know.
We have two dogs now.
That's right.
And just for the record, Emily, how much money are you down now?
I'm like, Pam, I'm about even. About even. I said I helped finance the blackjack table. I gave him $200.
Pam, how much is about even? And then let's see if you and Emmy are close.
No, I admit it. $200 in less than an hour. That might be some kind of a record or something.
Could I buy you a drink?
yeah, right.
Yeah, that kind of stuff.
Ooh. We have not done Mark and Charles.
We have not done.
I mean Charles and Rosie.
We'll do Charles and Rosie in a minute. Who else is here? Is that it?
That's it.
Don's here. Does he get to say a few words?
Does Don get to say a few words?
Well, you know. You know me.
They all know you.
Yeah. I'm the one that would take over the show, except the warden won't let me.
That's right.
You're there all the time.
I'm there all the time. One of the co-hosts with Don Shaw, and then we have our Tom Houston, who is our engineer, and we do it once a week, and we started out just kind of as a lark. Wouldn't you say a year and a half or so ago? Who would have thunk it?
We were getting together drinking once a week anyway.
I
so.
Was going to mention the getting together part. The drinking part. I wasn't going to say that. Anyway, and we started doing it. We decided that we may as well try to do something for
creative
and for humanitarian purposes, and also to give us another excuse to drink, because we could say that we had to go visit Phil, and then on Mondays it's mandatory to go, so that gives us 2 days instead of one to really drink.
Besides that, just arguing about politics was getting a little old.
Yeah, it got stale. Yeah.
And we have all sorts of people. We have Republicans and Democrats, and so we talk about that a whole lot. All right, I'll tell you what let's do. We'll take a short break and be back in just a minute with more of the Blind Handyman Show.
Information you probably never need. Titillating tidbits to make you think on the blind side. Here's Mark Christie.
The way Robert Toye sees it, he had no choice but to live a life of crime. Blind Bob, as Toye is affectionately known to his fellow inmates, is a veteran of 17 bank heists and 11 attempted jailbreaks. Nowadays, Toye is a resident of the Maximum Security Prison Hospital north of Santa Barbara, California, suffering from the incurable degenerative eye disease, retinitis pigmentosa. While serving time in the Springfield, Missouri Federal Prison on a mail fraud conviction in 1973, he overheard through the prison grapevine that federally insured banks instruct tellers to turn over cash to robbers without a fuss. Armed with this tip and a note that said he had a gun, he didn't. Blind Bob made his first heist in 1974, moments after being released from prison. But in 1977, as he was feeling his way out of a Citibank branch in New York City, he stumbled into armed guards, delivering money, and was arrested. In February 83, a bureaucratic snafu, a halfway house to which he had been assigned, refused to accept him because he was blind. But Toye put him back on the street. Shortly after, he was walking into the nearest Citibank, using a Coke bottle under his heavy prison-issued coat to simulate a gun. Toya ordered the teller to put the cash in a Saks Fifth Avenue bag and walked out with his biggest take yet, $18,000. May 24, 83, he varied his routine. He was caught and arrested and charged with 9 counts of armed bank robbery. Sentenced to 17 years, he planned his escape, his 11th attempt. He made it over 2 hurricane fences, using his cane to flatten the razor wire, but was captured after running into a pine tree. Bob does have a good side. He claims to have given, under aliases, a good chunk of what he had stolen to charity, including $35,000 to retinitis pigmentosa research. The rest of the cash he hopes to save for himself. On the Blind Side, I'm Mark Christie.
On the Blind Side, celebrating the contribution of blind people to societal evolution.
A player piano, and you may have player pianos in your homes, and you may have recordings of that song that's called The Birth of the Blues, but that was not a player piano, nor was it a recording. This was actually Rosie playing the piano. Rosie is quite an accomplished piano player. How are you, Rosie?
Fine, thanks.
It's good to have you with us on Blind Like Me.
Thank you.
I've gone this whole cruise, and I don't know your last name.
Hoffman Gomez.
Now what?
Hoffman Gomez.
Rosie Hoffman Gomez.
Right.
So Hoffman was your maiden name.
Right.
Okay, now we've got that. And Charles is also here. Charles is your husband. And hi, Charles.
Hi.
How are you?
Good.
And his
good.
Name is Hoffman Gomez.
And his name is Hoffman Gomez.
No, it's Gomez.
No, it's not. Okay, we'll try to be careful. Rosie, you were, I guess, at a young age, they discovered that you had a talent for music, right?
Right.
How old, when did they first realize this child has a musical bent?
When I was a year and a half old.
How would they know that at a year and a half old?
Well, I heard a lot of music when I was younger. My father used to play records a lot, and I put my ear to there was a screen on those old record players that you could put your ear to. And what I would do is I'd go up to the piano and with one finger try and imitate what I heard.
And so obviously you were good at it, and they decided, well, maybe she has some musical talent. Correct?
Correct.
Is that right? You can't shake your head now. It's not normal for blind people to shake their head, yes or no. You can't do that because they can't hear you on the radio. And so you had a piano in your home at an early age, right?
Right.
And you began imitating these records, and they decided, well, she has some musical talent. What, your parents, how did they treat you as a child? Did they let you do normal things? Did you go outside a lot and play with other kids, or what?
Well, I was sent to Blind Babies Nursery School when I was younger, when I was about 3. And then after about a year of that, they put me at Perkins. They overprotected me a lot, my mother especially.
You think overprotected you?
Yeah, pretty much.
Now, what is Blind Babies in Nursery School? I missed that one. I wasn't.
It was a school that we went to in Jamaica Plain. And they taught us how to, they taught us how to feed ourselves and basic needs.
Well, that was good. Learning to feed yourself was a good thing, though. I mean, why did you feel like you were overprotected? Did you feel like they didn't?
I guess my mother didn't know what to do with me, and my father wasn't the greatest of that either.
But he had a lot of records.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, I'll have to give him that. He had a lot of records. And so you feel like you were overprotected as a child, and they didn't let you do a lot of things.
Right.
But they did let you play.
Yeah. And they did let me go to dancing school. Okay. You know, tap dancing. They let me do that.
How did you do with that?
I did fine with that.
You did fine with tap dancing? I guess you wouldn't want to. I guess not.
I don't have tap shoes, but I can do it. No, I don't.
Oh, you didn't bring them?
No, I haven't had them for years.
See, we could have had our first radio tap dancer. Wouldn't it have been great? Tap dancing on the radio. Think of it. But, and so you did go to tap dancing school.
And I went horseback riding on Saturdays. And my father would take me to the firehouse on Sundays. He and I did a lot of stuff together, but, you know, my mother didn't know about half of it. She was more overprotective, I guess, than he was.
So you would do things, and your mother wouldn't know that you were doing these things.
Probably not.
So she basically, I guess, to quote a phrase, turned a blind eye.
Yeah, you could say that.
What did your parents do? Rosie, what did her parents do? What were their livelihoods? Just to give us an idea.
Well, my father started out in the Navy. And then he worked for Harbado's Auto Supply, and then towards the middle of his life, he worked for the commission. Well, it was the Division for the Blind in those days. Okay. My mother worked in a jewelry, Long's Jewelers, for many years.
Mm-hmm. And this all took place where? What town?
Dorchester.
Where did you grow up? Do what, ma'am?
I grew up in Dorchester.
Dorchester, what state?
Massachusetts.
Okay, so we're not all familiar.
And, of course, they sent me to camp. I went to Camp Allen in Wapanaki for quite a few years.
And you eventually ended up at a blind school.
I was in a blind school all my life. I went to Perkins.
Is that a private paid school?
No.
It's free. Is that the equivalent to the Massachusetts school?
That's a state school for the blind?
In Massachusetts, or is there another?
No, Perkins was in Watertown. It was a state run, I think.
Do you have to be a resident of Massachusetts, I guess, to go there? Can you go?
They took others.
Okay.
But I think, I don't know what they do today.
But that's where you were educated, at the
right.
Perkins
School for Blind
Institute.
Yeah.
They started teaching you Braille.
Right.
And teaching you to, I guess, dress yourself.
Yeah.
Things like that. Were you a good Braille student? Did you read Braille?
I started reading really good in about the second half of my second grade year.
Okay. Is this Braille still a part of your life? Do you still use?
Yes.
You use Braille. What do you use it for?
Braille music a lot, reading different magazines, but I use a lot of technology more. And I also have a Braille display on my Pac-Mate.
And you can actually read, you've actually read magazines in Braille?
Yeah, I can.
Okay, so you're a Braille reader.
Yeah.
As opposed to us who aren't.
Right.
All right. And so you finished high school at Perkins.
In 1965.
In 1965. And by then, you were playing well. I mean, you had a lot of musical training by then, right?
Right. But I had to get it outside the school, with the exception of my harmony classes with Edward Jenkins, and I took chorus at Perkins and voice for 1 year.
At Perkins?
Yeah.
Other than that, they taught you music outside the...
Right.
Outside of Perkins. Because they didn't have anyone there qualified to teach someone as gifted as you, or what?
It was... You know, they put everybody on the same levels, and I was more advanced, I guess.
But by then, you had taken lots of music by age 17 or 18.
Yeah.
And you said that age 16, I think you alluded to the fact that you played with the Boston
Pops
Orchestra. How did that happen? Tell us about it.
Leo Litwin, who was my teacher, was the Boston Pops soloist.
Was Boston Pops soloist?
Right.
Now, what did she play?
He was a pianist.
Oh, he was a pianist. And so he took you to play with this orchestra. This was in a big concert hall?
Symphony Hall.
Really?
Yeah.
In Boston?
Right.
What a deal. And so you graduated high school at Perkins, and you did you get scholarships to music school?
I went to Mount Ida. It was Mount Ida Junior College then. Now it's a full-fledged college. And I went there for 3 years where I got my Associate of Arts degree.
Which had very little to do with music, or this was an associate's degree in music?
No, associate's degree, period, I guess. And I also received the first of the annual alumni awards for persistent effort and dedication for attaining personal goals.
And you thought at that time, what am I going to do for a living? Did you feel like you could make a living doing music? Or?
Well, that's what my father wanted. He really pushed, and that's what he wanted.
He wanted you to do music?
Yeah.
But you had other ideas, or you...
I wanted to teach. I felt like a lot of pressure going on concert tours. In a way, now I'm sorry I didn't. But since I have been, you know, after graduation from the conservatory, and I don't regret I did what I did, except for it would have been fun doing the concert tours, but I wasn't sure if I could handle the pressure of it. I got a constant, so-and-so can do this, why can't you do this? You know, like cited peers.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was typical in those days. And then I graduated Mount Ida. You know, I went there for 3 years. Then I went to the Boston Conservatory and majored in music and minored in composition.
And planned on at that time teaching.
Yeah.
Did that work out?
Yes, it did.
You did some teaching
yeah.
for a while.
I still do it on occasion, but now I'm busy with ballet theater. I started playing ballet classes. I'm the first blind person in the States that has ever done this.
Mm-hmm.
I started in 1973 and still doing it.
You're still doing it?
Yeah.
Well, they're going to put you on regular at some point in time, don't you imagine?
In which ballet company do you work with?
Jose Mateo's Ballet Theater.
And you play the music they dance to?
Right.
How do they give you that music? Do they? Because they couldn't write in Braille, or they...
I take anything that I know from the classic rep and or improvise in that style.
So in other words, you'll find a song...
They'll set the tempo, and then I play accordingly. And if they want it faster, they give me signals, or they'll tell me, and that's about it. I've been doing it for 23 years. I can read everybody's cues, for the most part.
You can read their cues. If they want it faster, they tell you they want it faster.
Yeah.
If they don't want
they'll give me signals like snap their fingers faster. Then I'll know.
And if that piece doesn't fit the particular dance they're doing, maybe you would change...
Right.
And so you all come to a compromise on the song that you're going to use for their particular dance, right?
I'm the one that has to compromise.
You're the one that has to compromise.
Right.
Well, you're blind. What do you expect?
What seems to happen, I mean, Charlie has witnessed classes. See, maybe you can tell them. You know, they'll give a tempo and a 3-4 or a 4-4 or a 2-4. Ballet is divided into two parts, a bar, which is warm-up exercise plus training your body to do certain things and get it in shape for the center and for performance if that's your thing. And it consists of pliés, tendus. Pliés means to bend your knees. Tendus means to stretch. And then all the steps that are... in ballet, have pliés and tendus in them. And it all relates to that. And that, like the dégagés are fast tendus, but a little off the floor. You know, everything has stretch in it. A rondojambe has a 3-4. You go a circle around the leg. So it's natural. Some people do it in a 4-4, but I don't think it's as smooth, and I've told the teachers that. But then it goes on. And, yeah, C can, you can say some things, yeah.
Basically, what happens is that Rosie, being as gifted as she is, it then becomes possible to... develop a sense where you can, for the most part, know exactly what the instructor wants. And when I say you can develop a sense, it can can be, you know, 90%, 95%, almost 100% accurate most of the time. And as Rosie alluded to earlier, if there are any minor corrections, then naturally he or she is going to say, do a little slower, a little faster, whatever.
It obviously works. You've been there 30 years, right?
So. For this company, I have been here for since January 1988. I have played at other schools.
But you've been doing this ballet stuff for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
Now, what was this thing where you bend your knees? What was that called?
Plies.
Quies?
P-L-I-E-S. Plies.
Plies.
Right.
It's French.
It's a French.
That's what you did this morning, right?
Oh, you did?
Now, we were walking along, and he did a little knee bend there.
That's what he did.
Carol, his wife behind him, thought, we're stepping down. And she was already in it through. It was a little blind trick he learned at the service.
Do you think it would be, Rosie, like if we were going to rehearse the Nutcracker, and you say sometimes you improvise.
Not in the Nutcracker.
No, I mean, all right, so what would you put?
This is like a standard class.
Yeah. Maybe you could give us an example of what you do, like just improvise.
Did you put on the tape?
That would be good.
How much have you
had? We got three, four times.
Okay. Let's take the first exercise. Sometimes teachers will open with a tondo instead of a plie exercise. They'll go like, and they'll count it in a three. I'll give a four count introduction or two chords in.
Okay.
I'll do the two chords in first.
Now the
four counts would be this. Usually 32 or 64 counts. I just gave an example.
Okay.
For if they wanted a slow tondo in a 2-4, I'd probably do this. The first 16 counts. And then sometimes they'll give a combination. I'll give that and then a little faster toward the next 16 if they want it. And they'll tell me that. Each system has their own terminology, so I'm not going to go into that. Like Batma Degage and Batma Glisse are the same step and the same. You do like a fast 6-8 for that, like this.
Okay.
A ronde jambe, you could do something like this. Chopin. And a grand battement, for example, you could do like a march or a big, you know. Faster you do like that. But, you know, it's a lot of fun. And then I also train other pianists as well to... What I do is I write the terminology for them to memorize. It's best if pianists know the terms and associate it.
You mean for other pianists to play for ballet.
Right.
Because you got that down so well. It's fun, but I'm sure you get tired of playing the same things every day.
I don't play the same things every day.
Oh, you don't?
I improvise or, you know, I do what I think
so
is appropriate.
So you keep it in the same tempo.
Yeah.
You may change the song.
Right. You don't have to play the same things every day.
I tell you what, we want to talk to your husband, Charles. Let's take a short break and be back in just a minute with more of Blind Like Me.
Yeah. Wise child walks right out of here. I'm so excited I can barely cope. I'm sizzling like an isotope. I'm on fire, so cut me some slack. My brush is way gone.
Blind Sight. Here's a website our crack research team certifies screen reader friendly. Now with this week's Blind Sight. Here's Don Shaw.
You know, if you have an item that you want to purchase and you want to get some information about this item, prices, if you want to do a review and really get into it and find out the pluses and the minuses, the good and the bad, about whatever item it may be, anything from electronics to appliances and pretty much everything in between. Go and check out Price Grabber. That's www.pricegrabber, all one word, no spaces, .com. It is a fantastic resource of, of bargains and of customer reviews. Some really good customer reviews on things. Some items have, possibly up to 20 reviews on an item. Some may only have two or three reviews. But it is enough to read and get a sense of the product. And either way, good or bad. And you'll see reviews talking about a product in both lights, so to speak. Also, on a particular item, whether it be electronics or, again, whatever it may be, this site will search out and find you the stores they have listed with them that has the best price at that time on that particular item. Anyway, go and check them out. I think you'll like them. I will give them a screen reader friendliness rating of a 7. Until next week, I'm Don Shaw. Keep on blind sighting.
If you found a screen reader friendly website you'd like us to mention, send your email to blindlikeme, all one word, at txucom.net. And join us again next time for Blind Sight.
Rosie, what's your favorite song to play? What do you enjoy playing the most? What type?
I like everything, but I like Beethoven, I like Chopin, Gershwin.
Give us a little Gershwin.
Well, I had one question in that same vein. What is the key you hate to play in the most, and what's your favorite key?
D.
See, C is my favorite key, because it tells me what I can play in.
And you hate to play in C because it's so easy?
No, I just don't like the sound of it.
You don't like the sound of the key of C.
And D is your favorite.
D is my favorite key because it's bright.
So you should love Merle Haggard because most of his songs are in D.
Yeah.
Do you play any country and western, Rose?
No.
No country, and neither kind of music, country or western.
Oh, I thought that was one and the same.
Oh, excuse me. It's a joke.
Oh, okay.
Trust me.
Sorry.
I came to the radio station and said, what kind of music do I play? I said, here, we play both kinds, country and western.
I mean, I can play it.
He didn't think it was funny either. So. Now, what?
You know, like that. That kind of stuff.
So that's your concept of country western.
Or, well, it's part of it, or it's...
You're going to hate my CD.
Yeah.
stuff like that. That's a,
typical hillbilly country, western
right.
Country.
I get bored with 1-4-5-1.
You get bored with
1-4-5-1.
It makes you tired, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. I want to go to sleep. Hey, is this running? I hope not.
This is running.
Oh, my God.
We're on the radio. This is running. It's okay, though.
You're going to get mail from every country and western artist in the world.
That's right. They'll all be sending you things. But it's all right not to like country and western. I don't care much for classical.
How about a little Gershwin?
Okay.
What would you play if you're called on to play George Gershwin?
I did that three times already.
America and Paris.
Okay, I can do one part of it.
Okay.
Thank you.
How long have you and Rosie known each other?
Well,
she said too long.
Since 1980.
Since
1980.
Sorry, and you've been married that long? 1980?
No, we got married in May of 1982.
Really?
And it's been 22 wonderful years together.
Wonderful years. Rosie, you agree with that?
Yes, I do.
You were just kidding. Charles, what do you work? Are you gainfully employed?
Yes, I'm currently working for Home Depot. I'm working on a part-time basis because there's another project that I've also been working on my own. But basically what I do is I work in the phone center. I answer the phones. I give and take messages. And I also do an occasional public address announcement. So that's pretty much...
And what sort of assistive technology do you use in doing the job you do?
Well, I use the voice note, which I like very much. It's similar to the Braille and Speak, but it's a little bit different. But I do use the voice note. I keep a record of my messages, the managers that are on and off duty, and all kinds of things like that.
Now, did the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind buy that for you?
No, I actually bought that on my own.
I don't think so.
I actually bought that on my own.
Bought that on your own because yes. They refused to buy it for you. Once.
Well, they would give me the Braille and Speak, and the Braille and Speak is okay. But for any number of reasons, I saw the voice note and I liked it, and I decided that why not give it a try.
Sure. So I did. Think they're going to put you on full time there?
No, I was on full time, but then of my own accord chose to go on a part time basis.
Okay, and you help Rosie. Rosie goes to her job on her own.
Yes.
Independent of you.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have two different worlds that you work in.
Yes.
All right, and your vision is what?
I have a little bit of vision. I can see light and dark. I can see objects. And basically, I can see well enough to get around in buildings without the use of a cane. Now, when I'm in Home Depot, I do use the cane because I travel so well that a lot of people think that I can actually see. And I'm always concerned that somebody that may be trying to get my attention and I don't realize it right away, if they see the cane, they might be able to relate as to why I didn't respond. So
if you didn't have the cane, they might ask you where the inch and a half wood screws are.
Right.
And they'd go tell the tour, the rudest guy in the world.
That's right. He didn't help us at all.
Exactly.
He was just some guy, remember, if you have the cane that says, I'm blind, don't mess with me.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
Okay, and you were born this way, or?
Yes, I was born blind.
Born blind.
But my vision has been very stable all my life, so I haven't really had to make any big adjustments.
Well, was it said, I see a tree well enough that I'll stop before I run into it? Was that you? That wasn't you, was it?
Nope.
I was thinking on this cruise, said that. One more thing about a project you're involved in.
Yes. Since I was a kid, I always had a fascination with machinery, with all kinds of things like boats and amusement park rides and roller coasters and all that kind of stuff. And I've always, since I took my first ride on the Revere Beach Cyclone, I've always had this dream about maybe someday building something like that. As time went on, I realized that there was a lot that I didn't know. There were a lot of aspects to this that were not really available to me, not the least of which was the ability to make some sort of a drawing that would make sense to an architect or an engineer. So this one obstacle alone caused a lot of time to pass without the project really going anywhere. But in the last 2 or 3 years, I became aware of a construction set that was made that I actually found in a Discovery Channel store that indeed allowed one to make tactile models of roller coaster configurations. And at first it was too good to believe that I would really finally be able to do this, but I got a bunch of these construction sets. I started building, and in about a year's or a little less than a year's time, I had the final version of the model finished, and I was so elated. I went through a bottle.
You wanted to build a drawing or do a drawing for that a sighted architect could read. Why?
Because I wanted it to be upscaled to a full-blown roller coaster.
In other words, you'd like for somebody to build a roller coaster you drew.
Yes.
But then wouldn't we all? And so you finally, with this product that was an off-the-shelf product, bought at the
Discovery Channel store,
you were able to do that.
Yes, and what gave me the idea, what kind of pushed me over the edge was that I had watched on public television, and in fact a program explained that a lot of designers will make a quote, what it will look like drawing, end quote. And when I heard that, I just said to myself, well, is there any reason why I couldn't attempt to do the same thing? Now,
is there a contest you would enter that they would say the winner of this contest, we're going to build this roller coaster? Or what?
I'm not aware that there is such a contest, but what I decided to do was to ask different people different questions, and I'm currently working with a fellow that's helping me to make a professional video of what I actually have right now, and we're going to use that as a marketing tool.
And you would hope maybe to get someone to fund the roller coaster you've designed?
Yes.
Now, do you have, I know nothing about this, do they make, I know there's model railroads, are there model roller coasters that you can have in your home that will simulate roller coasters?
Well, you can get a number of toy models, and some of them are actually quite good. Some of them are just pieces of junk, but this is a model that they provide you with a track, and they provide you with these little plastic marble-like balls that will go along the track. And the idea that it is that if it's properly configured, it will start from the top and, you know, go up and over every hill, around every curve, and end on the bottom without coming off the track. And to make this happen, of course, everything has to be at the proper angle. And there's a lot of experimentation that goes on in this process. And the model that I've built, which is the first of several that I'm planning on doing, has 13 hills.
You also have model trains?
Yes.
Okay, do you? We had a gentleman on the show who was very interested in contacting other blind people who have model trains. Is there a list for blind people who have model railroads, or do you know?
No, I'm not aware of a list like that, but it's interesting that you say that, because I've always wanted to know if there were others that like to do the same kind of thing. It's a hobby that I've been enjoying for most of my life.
I think there are lots of others, other blind people who have model railroads. Do you have an email address that you would be willing to give us if someone wanted to contact you? Maybe you folks could get a list or a group going for model railroad, blind model railroad enthusiasts.
Sure. My email address is coasterrider. CoasterRider, that's all one word, at rcn.com.
All right, do it one more time for us.
Okay, the email address one more time is coasterrider@rcn.com.
That is the little things, some little things that we did on the cruise. There we go, the blind like me, or blind handyman cruise, whichever you choose to call it. It was lots of fun. I don't know. We may try something a little less ambitious, like just a get-together at a hotel near the airport in Houston a little later on this year for people who listen to these shows, blind like me, and also the blind handyman. By the way, if you'd like to be a guest on the show, please write me at blindlikeme@txucom, blindlikeme@txucom.net. blindlikeme@txucom.net, and I'll respond to you, and we'd love to have you as a guest on the show, you know? Next week, we'll be back to regular format and doing the regular things. I can't remember who the guest is next week. Maybe the gentleman in Indianapolis, Indiana, who owns two or three radio stations, and so that'll be good for us radio enthusiast. We'll do that again next week. Thanks for listening. If you're listening on ACB Radio, stay tuned. The Blind Handyman will be along, those guys with hammers and saws. And we thank you so much, and we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.